I hope folks are there, and I hope folks are listening. And I hope Alan and Deborah can hear me.
I can hear you. This is Deb.
Hi.
Hi. I can hear you as well.
There we go. Now I can hear me too. Well, welcome.
Well, thank you.
This is exciting because for those people who listen to Arts Live and Local, they know that I often have virgins on the air. As a matter of fact, Deborah DeWitt, have you ever been on Arts Live and Local?
No, I haven't.
And have you ever been on KMUN?
No, I haven't.
Oh, my God.
Oh, I'm honored. Thank you.
We have a double virgin with Deborah DeWitt, and I'll tell you who she is in a minute. Alan, I'm afraid you don't qualify. Is that right?
I've been on the show a couple times.
You've been here before. However, we have a brand new person who's running the show, and that is our new staff member, new-ish staff member, Nevada. So KMUN has a virgin experience, too. So I'm so glad to have you here. Alan Cantor is the director, owner, proprietor of the White Bird Gallery in Cannon Beach. She also is a wonderful artist herself. And I'm going to get her to tell you the story of how she became inadvertently a gallery owner from being an artist. And I think there's an art in running a gallery as well. Would you agree?
Absolutely. every decision that I have to make on a daily basis seems like an artistic decision.
Exactly. So. Creative, for sure. And Deborah
yes.
DeWitt, I don't believe I have met you. Where do you live, by the way?
Are
you...
I live 2.5 miles south of Wheeler.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're in North Tillamook County. Great.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm virtually local, kind
yes.
of. I mean, as local, you know, the big North Coast area, that part
yes.
of the community.
You definitely qualify as local, for sure. And Deborah is the featured artist at the White Bird Gallery for August and the rest of August and September. The show is opening tomorrow evening. Please correct me if I say anything wrong there. And runs through September 30th. And this is on the walls. As a matter of fact, I was eavesdropping. This is Carol, by the way. If I was eavesdropping on Alan and Deborah, and it seems the show is going up, or perhaps, I don't know if it's all up yet, but it looks fabulous. I haven't seen the show in the gallery, but I have seen some of the paintings, and I'm already in love with your work, Deborah.
Oh, so thank you so much.
I really look forward to someday being able to get a little bit closer to them. So you work in oil on wood and canvas, or
wood? I have in the past used canvas, but I prefer wood panels. So that's pretty much what I work on. And I build them myself for the most part, and it's a whole from beginning to end process.
So what kind of wood are you using then? Is it plywood?
It's just, you know, it's birch plywood.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's high grade birch plywood.
Mm-hmm.
And then I put ground on them. Oil ground, and sometimes rabbit skin glue, gesso. So there are a couple different grounds that I use on the support.
And what made you, what's the difference between painting oil on canvas and wood, and why did you choose wood?
A couple of reasons. Well, several reasons. One is that I guess the most important reason is that I like the way the paint sits up on the hard surface.
Mm-hmm.
I use a lot of layers of paint and thinnish layers, although I do also use some thick paint here and there. And it just sits up on the wood, so you get the texture
mm-hmm.
Of the paint, not so much the texture of the canvas. And secondly, canvas is fragile. Leonardo da Vinci painted it on wood. You know, this has been going on for a long time. They didn't use canvas way back when, and wood lasts a long time. And canvas can be, you know, you can poke something through it, or it loosens, or it just has sort of some technical issues.
How big is your work?
I don't work very big, actually. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've done a couple large triptychs, you know, that were like 8 feet long or whatever. Mm. But typically, my work is from 3 to 4 feet. That's sort of the largest thing I typically do, and then it's down from there.
That's big.
But okay. Most of them are smaller.
Well, we jumped right into that because I just had to know some of these things after looking at your work. The name of the show is The Choices We Make. And what I want to do is go back to Alan. And Alan, I would love it if you could give us your genesis story on White Bird, and then how you choose your artists. How do artists come to you?
Well, I worked for Evelyn George's for about 9.5 years as a gallery assistant. Mm-hmm. And towards the end of her life, because she was in her 80s, I was managing the gallery a lot more fully. And when it was obvious time for her to retire after 39 years of owning the business, mm-hmm. Her family came to me and said, Would you take over mom's business? You're the one for the job. She always wanted you to have it, that kind of thing.
No pressure.
And you're right, no pressure at all. And I gave it a lot of thought because at the time my personal art career was just starting to take off. I just got some pieces into like a hospital and I was doing lots of shows. And I took a couple deep breaths and just couldn't imagine my life without the White Bird and without the Cannon Beach arts community. So we closed the gallery for about 3 months. Did some remodeling, downsized so that it was more manageable for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And then we reopened in March of 2011.
Wow.
And yeah.
Wow.
And
Nine years.
Would say shortly after that, to kind of segue into how do you pick the artist, I met Deborah DeWitt at a community art show at the Cannon Beach Gallery, and we started to talk because I saw some of her paintings there. And she told me she used to show at White Bird way back in the day, before I was even ever around. And we kind of started talking, and I fell in love with her work, and it just seemed like a great relationship to get her back in the gallery.
Fantastic. And you used to show, I don't know, are you still painting? Do you have time?
I don't really have that much time. Yeah. I'll do a couple small things here and there for the Cannon Beach Gallery.
Exactly.
Have a community art show, I'll do one or two things.
Because I always enjoyed your work at the Cannon Beach Gallery. That's how I met you before the White Bird took over. So, okay. So you've got now, with this unusual situation that we're all in, you've got in-person as well as online happening? Have you always shown work online, or is this new?
We have certainly showed work online. I would say all of the past, you know, Deborah DeWitt exhibits, we posted all of the images on the website. I'm trying to make the online exhibits a little bit more expensive with some more background and some candid studio shots and shots of pictures of the actual exhibit for people that aren't traveling, that are not going to be coming to see it in person, to try to kind of humanize the online experience a little bit more, so it's not just scrolling through a bunch of flat images.
Right.
And so far it's been very well received from, you know, our mailing list and people that are not traveling. They're really grateful to receive the information and be able to enjoy the arts from their house.
Yeah, including me. That's all I got to see, as a matter of fact. Heading back, Deborah, The Choices We Make is the name of the show, and I'd like to know what you're talking about. I noticed that the one that really grabbed me is your cat on the Middle East carpet.
Yeah.
It starts in a lit space. I can't even tell whether that lit space is inside or out.
Good. I'm glad you can't.
Because I noticed that a lot of your things move. Your paintings move, and that one, and what it moves through is a rectangular, what might be a door, but it's totally open, and you go right outside into nature. So it all comes, it's all around. And I, when I was looking at some of the other work, I noticed you have inside-outside work. So what's going on?
Well, that it's a, it has been a major theme of mine for many, many years. And I just keep refining it or stretching it or exploring it. And it's windows are really important, or window shapes, or what, like you said, it's not quite a door. It's not, you know, it's more like an opening. They've appeared in, I mean, way back, even when I was a photographer, windows were a big part of my work. And I've sort of developed over the years, it's become a way for me to express our inner lives, our, the difference between our inner experience and our outer experience. So that, you know, then that translates into the natural world and our mental world, our mind, you know, our human experience. And so it, it serves as a symbol for many levels of, you know, of thought and of idea. And it, so they, it pops up or becomes the framework for, an idea I have. And then, you know, all, then there are all the parts that go into that.
Right. And it does, I felt that way too. I could look at that for a long time. I kept noticing more and more things. It wasn't until after I looked at your paintings that I read and realized that you started your arts career, or perhaps professional arts career, as a photographer. So did you, had you been painting before, or did you study photography, or what, where did this all...
Well, I'm self-taught. From the beginning, but I did start, after I left college, I seriously pursued photography, color, fine art photography, and I was fortunate enough to have some success right off the bat in my early 20s. And so, you know, you could say that was, you know, it was a doomsday thing, because then you're like doomed for the rest of your life as an artist. Like, you can't do anything else. Once you have that experience, you're hooked, you know. And so, but I, my family, my father's family were painters several generations back in Holland. And so I had a sort of cultural experience growing up. And eventually I... the photography was not satisfying to me, and I really wanted to paint. And so I just started, you know, I, but in the meantime, I had this, this already. I was showing, and it's how I made my living with my photography. And so it was a sort of long transition into painting. So I went from photography to pastel, and then I didn't have a studio I could paint in, and then I moved into painting. And so all my, you know, my entire adult life, I have been working towards, I mean, and making a living with my artwork.
Which is fantastic.
In all its various forms all along the way. But in a very self-taught, you know, self-motivated, crazy way.
But successful. So, so are you doing any, do you do any photography, or just...
I actually, you know, it's funny. I was very prepared and wanted to sort of leave the photography behind. But as it turns out, at this point in my life, and for the last over 20 years, I've been licensing photographs to a calendar publisher. And so that is part, and I do new work every year for this calendar publisher. So I'm kind of doing both at the same time, but it, it, you know, a painting takes, you know, months, and a photograph takes a 60th of a second. So,
well, you know,
I spend a lot more time painting than I do photographing.
Clearly, we can do the math there, but that's interesting, because the photography is got sort of boundaries, because you're doing that the calendar. So you have probably a time deadline. And,
I mean, I'm, like I said, I'm doing that. But it's not nearly as demanding as painting. But,
I do have
deadlines, and it is a source of income for me.
Right.
So that, you know, it's all these little things to support myself. I mean, little and not so little.
Yeah. and it keeps you
But at the same time, because, I'm a profoundly visual person as a result, and it all feeds into each other.
Yeah.
You know, it all is all one big source of inspiration, and they feed off of one another to some degree. I'm always looking.
And you're capturing details, too, and you're putting them in there, which is why I can keep looking and
seeing. Yeah, observation, very important.
Yeah, yeah, right. And translating the observations into the work that we get to see. So, and you also write?
I used to write more. I have actually written a couple of books, one many years ago as a much younger person. It was I was very lucky to have it published, and it's still out there. You can find it at the gallery, actually, at Whitebird.
Nice.
And it was about my photography.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not really about photography. It's about light.
Ah.
So, I also... so that painting has that cat in it, right?
Yeah,
well,
right.
Cats for me are an important symbol of that, of an animal, of a being that is in both the interior and exterior. They're both domestic and wild, and
mm-hmm.
so the cat is not just a cat, not just a nice fuzzy animal. To me, it represents. Something more than that, and so I've done a lot of work with cats in it,
mm-hmm.
and so there's a book that I wrote. It's like a little story about a feral cat that I tamed, and in that book there are about 40 paintings and pastels that I did. So
nice.
I did that, and then there's another book about books. So books are another symbol for me.
Uh-huh.
And so, yes, those, but, and I write for my own pleasure, and I write, one day maybe I'll do another book. We'll see.
Well, so let me ask you, for Alan, and I'm going to ask you directly, Alan, but you have, the gallery, which means you leave home and you go to your workplace, which is a fabulous workplace. The Whitebird Gallery is just gorgeous, but it's still separate from your home. Deborah, has this new age that we're in right now, not the political ones so much, although it's all wrapped up together, but the virus, has that affected your work, or are you able to just keep going because you...
I've been very fortunate. I live also in an incredibly beautiful place here on the coast, and my studio is at home, and I am a homebody. So although it's just this dreadful situation for many, for millions. For me, the fact that I had this show to work towards during this time was a blessing.
Mm-hmm.
And because of the, limited, sort of our restricted movements, I had few distractions. And so I was really able to focus and while feeling like I had a purpose,
Right.
It was been so hard for people to be, like everything shut down and their lives sort of abruptly come to a halt.
Mm-hmm.
Mine sort of deepened instead of... getting restricted. I mean, my work life did.
Yeah. Well, and there we go again, how the arts, we always talk about the arts saves lives.
Yeah.
Thank you, Lorene Ortiz. And art heals, and it does it in so many different ways. So this is yet another. So, Alan, how is it working for you with the gallery? I think that you will be having... a limited number of people inside?
Yeah, we've been operating just letting six people in at a time, plus the staff person, of course. Mm-hmm. It just, that feels like we could technically have a few more people, but that just feels like the right amount for mm-hmm. everybody to feel comfortable and safe and be able to have a nice experience and not feel overcrowded. So it's been going rather well. And speaking of art saving lives, I feel like people are craving art almost more now than ever, now that they're staying home, which has been a very surprising experience for me to see how much people are grateful for the art.
Wow.
And how grateful they are that we're open, that they can come in and they can have that kind of experience, because they're not experiencing Europe right now and they're not experiencing certain other things that they might ordinarily be doing.
Right.
They can still experience the art, and they're so appreciative of it. And it's been like a nice beacon of light for me to see people reacting that way.
So why don't you tell folks where you are, and also should people call in advance, make appointments, or how are you?
If somebody would like to make a private appointment, we are more than happy to accommodate that, but they should definitely call in advance. And we are in Cannon Beach on North Hemlock. It's 251. It's a fairly big building on the north end of town. And Deb's show is actually, we got it hung yesterday, and so it's actually up now. And so
okay.
people can be come to the gallery. We're going to be opening at 10 o'clock on Saturday mm-hmm. To see the work, and the exhibit will also open online tomorrow morning.
Uh-huh. And what's the what's that address?
At whitebirdgallery.com.
Okay, that's easy. Okay, and what are your hours when in the actual gallery?
Most days we're open from 11 to 5, mm-hmm. But we're opening tomorrow from 10 to 6 because it's
first day.
Having a new show, so we wanted to kind of extend the hours a little bit.
Right, right. Wonderful. Well, it's amazing to be able to let folks know that it's all still happening, whether it's the artists doing their art, making their art, and galleries or whoever is able to show them trying their best to make it available. So am I right that you have some other work on your website as well? Did you have a summer show up? Or?
Well, we actually have restarted our first show of the season, opened March 20th, and then we closed the gallery on March 21st.
Oy.
So what I did during the closures was I beefed up the online shows. So you can actually see a handful of the online shows from the season, starting from March up until now, are all kind of posted on there. People want to peruse the other artists that had exhibitions, March, April, May, and June.
So did you have all these computer skills already?
Yes, somewhat. I mean, my computer skills are a little bit outdated, but that was one of the things that Evelyn had me do is, she had me working on her website and designing her postcards and writing her press releases. And so
good.
I was all ready to go when I took over the gallery. But, of course, technology moves faster than I do.
Yeah.
Next year for our 50th anniversary, we're going to have a brand-new website where people can hopefully check out online and do all that good stuff.
Wow.
Whatever he likes to do now.
50th anniversary. Yeah, I was at the I guess it was the retirement party for Evelyn at the gallery when her family was there. And so I was so thrilled when I heard that you were taking over because it felt right. And I'm glad that the family pursued that and knew that the George family's been around and now the Cantor moves into the place. So you're still happy there?
Yeah, I am very happy. I really love the artists that I work with, and I really believe in their work. And it being able to be that kind of bridge between the artist and the enjoyer and the appreciator and the buyer, just it's actually very, very satisfying. With my art background, I feel like I've got a lot of insight into what the artists are doing and what they're feeling and thinking. And I can help translate that to, just a pure appreciator, and it's very satisfying.
And if someone You know, when I asked you how you accessed artists or brought artists in, and we went directly to Deborah, do artists ever contact you?
All the time. All the time. But I'm, especially because our space is a lot smaller than it was when Evelyn owned the gallery.
Yeah.
It was twice the size.
Half the size.
I'm a lot more discerning, and every year that goes by, I seem to be even more and more discerning, because at the end of the day, I think to myself, if I don't like it, I can't sell it, or it's not going to sell. It's just not going to be the right energy, kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. So a lot of
if I look around, I love everything we have, and that's a goal.
And what a way to live because you're living in that space for so much of your lifetime. That nice to be surrounded with stuff you love and you appreciate. So, and of course, that's very subjective, and that's the beauty of being the boss.
Yes. Well, that's the beauty of art. It is so subjective.
Absolutely.
But, you know, the artists create, curators and directors love it, and it all kind of translates, you know, at the end of the day.
Wonderful. Okay, so folks, this is the Whitebird Gallery, 251 Hemlock. Is it North Hemlock or just Hemlock?
North Hemlock,
Cannon Beach, and the website is whitebirdgallery.com. And my guests have been Alan Cantor, the owner and artist who mothers the gallery as well as provides all of us with good art, and Deborah DeWitt. Congratulations to you on this show.
Thank you very much.
I'm just delighted. I wish I could be there to see it in person, but maybe the next one. In the meantime, I'm going to go on the web. The show is The Choices We Make, and that's Deborah is spelled as in Deborah, and DeWitt with one T.
Yes.
Capital D-E, capital W-R. If you make it French instead of Dutch, it's, you know, of wit. What a great name. Wonderful. Okay, thank you both so much for being my guests.
Thank you very much.
Arts Live and
really
Local.
Thank you, Carol.
Great. And enjoy the show.
Okay. Thank you so much, Carol.
You bet.
Thank you. I hope to meet you one day.
Oh, absolutely. It will happen.
Okay.
It will happen.
All right. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And you are listening to Arts Live and Local. This is Carol. And I think Nevada is somewhere nearby. I see a hand in the air. And he's going to... We started the show with some music from Our Lady Peace. And now we're going to Toots and the Maytals. Stay tuned, folks. CoastRadio.org. I seem to have lost my sound. Can't hear any. Oh, there we go. Hi, Phyllis, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi, welcome, Phyllis Taylor, another one of our very talented local artists. Phyllis has been showing her art at the Tempo Gallery, and I believe they opened and closed a show last weekend, and giving people a chance to say goodbye. Is that accurate?
Yes.
Okay, so tell us what's going on with the Tempo Gallery, the background of it, and then the...
Wow.
Yeah.
Where to begin?
Well,
okay.
sketchy.
It all revolves around the Astoria Music Festival.
Right.
They had rented the space, and it's this big, long, skinny space,
yeah.
8 feet wide and I don't know how long. And they didn't need all that space all year, just in the summer months. So they thought, oh, wouldn't it be cool if we had art on the walls? So they started a group, and I think the very first name was the Music Festival Artists. And that was exactly 8 years ago.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, and it grew. I joined Tempo 6 years ago, a little over 6 years ago, when I moved here. And it's been a very nice symbiotic relationship between us and the music festival, because all of us in Tempo are either musicians or married to musicians.
Right. Yeah. That's true. You know, I never even thought about that.
Yeah.
You and
so,
Thron.
You know, we had that automatic.
Singers
so,
as
you know.
Well. Yeah. Carol is singer and Constance. Yeah. Oh, mm-hmm. How funny. So and of course the name Tempo was a natural with
right.
music.
Music.
Yeah. So the Astoria Music Festival was running strong for many years, but it started to slide, and I guess they were ready to give up the space. Is that how that worked?
Well, they were going to do the Opera Apprentice program this year, but, you know, the whole COVID thing just
right.
canceled everything.
Right, right.
And so they just simply can't afford to stay there, and we sublet from them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we shared the rent and stuff, which was wonderful for us. But that
yeah.
means, you know, the landlord wants to
full rent.
Do something else.
Yeah. right.
And
right.
so we have to be out. So we're out. But it's
wow.
been a great run.
It has, and it was such a sweet gallery because, as you say, I didn't realize it was just 8 feet. It's like one of those railroad apartments.
We tried to make it as bright as possible.
Well, it was full of art, but it was long and narrow, so you walked mm-hmm. and you kind of had to turn from side to side to see
yeah.
the two walls. So who were the, in the end, when we
six
named...
Of us.
Yeah, who were the six?
Okay, me, Constance Wassenden was our fabric artist.
Mm-hmm.
Carol Smith was our photographer. Ed mm-hmm. Peterson is a painter, and he's going to be 89 next month.
Oh my gosh, and he's amazing.
So he was in there spackling this week.
Helping. Oh Lord, he's been on Arts Live and Local several times, mm-hmm. and he keeps everybody engrossed. He's got so many life stories.
Oh, he does.
Including that he started art very late.
Yeah, yeah.
Which
well,
is,
all of us are retired. Well, then there's Vicki Baker.
Right.
Who is a painter and printmaker, and then Thron Riggs, who's a painter. And we all had other kinds of jobs, and then we retired and wanted to be artists, It's fun to be part of a gallery. For me, when I first moved here, Art Walk was just a fantastic way to get to meet so many people in
right.
the community.
Well, so, were you already painting at that point?
Yeah, I was a professional illustrator and graphic designer in Indiana.
Oh, so you were...
I was the one who had an art career.
You were the only one with the art career then, because
yeah.
Several teachers, social workers, engineer...
Mm-hmm.
Not the Constance, and of course bar pilot Thron.
Yeah.
I can't remember what Ed did because it was so
he was
many
a band
years.
Director.
Okay, so he was music for
and
sure.
Cool. Yeah,
yeah,
mm-hmm.
yeah. So you folks didn't just have jobs; you had professions, and full-time professions. And so the idea that you all blossomed, although I don't know if you get as much credit, Phyllis, since you were working in the arts already.
Well, but I was doing like pen and ink technical illustrations.
Ah.
So being around Ed, he kept telling me, paint bigger, paint bolder, and it was...
Right. Color. Yeah. And you do. And you also, a lot in the flowers, also on the boats, and people.
I love to do people.
Yeah, yeah. So what do you see for yourself? I know you can't talk for anyone else.
I have no idea. We have our Facebook page.
Okay.
And ironically, after everything closed with COVID, I sold more art through the Facebook page than I would have ever guessed.
Wow.
So, you know, that's obviously, it can work. We're just not sure what all we have to do yet.
Right,
It's new territory.
Yes. Do you have studio space in your home?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you can keep working. The problem is it'll keep adding up. Although, if we get back to studio tours, I remember one year.
I was on studio tour, and you and Vicki
Baker.
Yeah.
Vicki moved her stuff over to your house as well, and it was wonderful. It was the garden inside and outside. So, yeah. Well, I hope everybody keeps on making art. Ed Peterson, his work is big. Some of it.
Very big, yeah.
A lot of it. And so it needs to go somewhere.
He had quite a successful year in Jackson, Wyoming last year.
Oh, that's right. Yes, he talked about that. So, well, you don't have quite as many 89-year-old colorful artists,
that's on the palette
as well as in their lives. So if people do want to... Is the Facebook page still up now, or can people access?
Yes.
So tell folks how to access. I don't know anything about Facebook.
Yeah, you do have to have a Facebook account, I think. You just say Tempo Gallery Astoria, and that'll get to us. There is another Tempo Gallery. I can't remember whether it's in New Mexico or San Diego, but... Mm-hmm. When you see palm trees and flamingos, you know you're in the wrong place.
unless it's, Vicki coming from Florida or something like that, bringing the palm trees. But, okay, so Tempo Gallery Astoria.
Astoria.
We'll get you to the Facebook. And that's the only place at this point that you
folks...
At this point. And you'll see what happens. So,
yeah. Well, we are retired after all.
Well, you know what they say, that's the... That's the busiest time of life.
When you retire. I'm involved in a lot of other things.
You certainly are. You're a professional cello player as well. And, of course, that's shut down as well, but doesn't end. And is it true that you were the featured artist at Tempo in March this past year?
I was one of those months. I can't remember.
Okay. Well,
it was either February or March.
I saw you did Coffee, The Endless Love.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
The Endless Love of the Pacific Northwest. I love that. That's a great, great title. So, okay. Well, I wish you luck. Oh, I did have a question about that. Have you ever painted with coffee?
You mean use it in my paint?
Yes.
No,
because
I drink it too.
there was an artist who had her stuff up at the Three Cups, and she painted portraits and buildings and stuff like that, all with coffee. And then my guests last week also talked about one of them drank the coffee, and the other one used it in her art. That was Carista and Audrey with the brand new Cambium Gallery. So, well, lots of luck. I'm sure I will see you once the world opens back up.
Keep
the colors coming. And thanks so much for coming in and letting folks know what's happening, because people were asking. So,
we're still around.
You made a Tempo Gallery definitely made an impression. So that's
thank
good.
Thank you.
Okay. Take care, and thanks so much for being here. Phyllis Taylor with Tempo Gallery. Okay. And we're going to listen to some more music, and my last guest is going to come in and tell you how you can get money for your arts and cultural project. Nevada? That's Carolyn Wonderland, Walk On. These last pieces we've been hearing today are all from the Occupy album. It's some wonderful community member here, right here in Coast Community Radio Land, gave me a 4-CD set to play on the radio years ago when we were dealing with Occupy, and it's just packed with good stuff. So whoever you are, I don't even know who it was, thank you so much. And by the way, folks, you may be listening for the first time, or you may be a regular listener, and I hope you will continue to be a regular listener of KMUN and a supporter. Next week on Monday, we start our Gentle Pledge Drive, and we would love to have your support. You can start sending checks to KMUN P.O. Box 269 Astoria 97103 now, or go online to coastradio.org, or you can wait till next week. You can call in 503-325-0010 next week. I believe that's right. Just listen in, and be sure to support your favorite radio station in the world. That's what I plan to do. And Charlene Larson is here again. She was here on my first Almost Live and Local show last month. We were celebrating the Performing Arts Center, which is now known as the Charlene Larson Center for the Performing Arts. Today she's wearing a different hat, but it's all part of the same world. It's all about the arts and culture and creativity and how that keeps our lives going, keeps all of us going, keeps our community, and maybe the only thing in the world that's going to make it possible for this world to come back together. So welcome back, Charlene.
Thank you very much, Carol. It's nice to be with you this afternoon.
Right, exactly. We're getting closer and closer. Charlene is wearing her hat this time as the co-chair of the Clatsop County Cultural Coalition. That's the four C's. Her co-chair is Janet Bowler. And I'm going to let Charlene tell you what that group is, how many people are involved. Many of you listeners to this show are familiar with it because the Cultural Coalition has played an important part in supporting the arts in this community, getting finances, getting money from the Oregon Cultural Trust, which many of us support, and then the money comes back to our community and the coalition hands it out. So, Charlene, tell us the fantastically exciting news that's happening and then about the coalition and how you work.
Thank you, Carol. It is exciting news indeed, because as part of the action by the Oregon legislature, there is a coronavirus relief funds for cultural support, or CRFCS, and the Oregon Cultural Trust and the county cultural coalitions and the tribal cultural coalitions are charged with distributing these funds throughout the state of Oregon to cultural organizations. And it's a very tight timeline.
Oh, yes.
So the application went live on August 12th, which was Wednesday, about 11:45 a.m., and it will close on August 24th at noon.
Wow. That's incredible.
And yeah. The application is available online at the Oregon Cultural Trust website. And so that's www.culturaltrust.org.
Right.
And the application is there. The eligibility is there. And it is, as you know, as we both know, a very fast turnaround for grants.
Yeah.
There is $25.9 million in funding that has been made available from the $50 million relief package that was sent to the Oregon legislature, and then this cultural portion of the relief package was approved and acted on by the emergency board of the Oregon legislature.
Are you saying that the Oregon legislature received $50 million and decided to put $25 million of it into the arts and culture?
That's part of it. And the rest also went into arts and culture to individual organizations, and you can also see that list online. So things like the Ashland Shakespearean Festival, the large cultural group in the state. So it is an actual $50 million relief package for Oregon culture, approved by the Emergency Board of the Oregon Legislature.
State get that kind of money, or what? How it this? Because the money came from the federal government CARES Act, didn't it?
Correct. And I cannot answer that question for you as far as every other state.
Yeah.
What I know about is Oregon, and what we are going to be able to distribute in Clatsop County is based on a population base and to our cultural entities, we're figuring in the neighborhood of about $200,000, which is a big boost.
I would say so. Isn't it usually closer to $10,000-$12,000 a year?
And yes, it is. And that program still continues in our normal cycle. So this is something above and beyond what we normally do as a cultural coalition.
Boy, you so guys,
You asked a little bit about the cultural coalition.
Yes.
The Oregon Cultural Trust and the idea of that funding came into being in 2001. And then we were charged, each county, with forming up a cultural coalition. We did that here in Clatsop County in 2004.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have a 15-member group
mm-hmm.
that is spread throughout the county, north, south, in between,
mm-hmm.
and representing all of the cultural entities as far as performing and visual arts, heritage, and humanities.
Mm-hmm.
And we have also, we were one of the first counties to also include student members
nice.
in their junior year as an apprentice and in their senior year as a full voting member. So we also get the perspective of a young mm-hmm. person's approach.
Are you talking high school, junior, and senior?
We're talking high school.
Okay,
yes.
That's wonderful. Wonderful.
Yes.
Okay, so usually with the other grant each year, the Cultural Coalition offers workshops for people who are interested but have never filled out a grant application, have no idea how to do it. You don't have time to do anything this year for this.
No, and that's right. And the helpline is supported by the Oregon Cultural Trust.
Okay.
So, and that is available to everyone to call into that and get information on, you know, if they have questions.
Right.
And on the Oregon Cultural Trust site is one of those FAQs.
Yes, facts.
Frequently asked questions.
Right.
And that's very helpful, too.
Right.
Because what it's about is applying for this funding if you were impacted by COVID-19 and you had to have increased expenses
mm-hmm.
because of the things you had to do in relation to COVID-19.
Like cancellations or postponements of public programming?
Well, primarily expenses involved in.
Uh-huh.
So when you look at your kind of normal budget,
mm-hmm.
then you look at the period from March 1st to December
mm-hmm.
30th
okay.
to determine what those additional expenses are that you had to come up with in order to weather or to prepare for COVID-19. And in the nonprofits in Clatsop County, some have been able to reopen, you know, such as our museums.
Yeah.
But they had to expend funds.
Right.
In order to do that.
Safely.
To meet the requirements.
Right.
Of
right.
reopening in, you know, in phase two.
Okay, so I have two questions about that. I was thinking that, for example, some of the venues have monthly expenses whether or not they're open. And so if they don't have any income coming in, then they still have to, they've lost money that usually pays for those things. Does that figure into this?
That can figure in.
Okay. And the other question is, what about, I know for the regular coalition grants, individual artists can apply. What about this?
Yes, on the individual artist piece, they cannot apply for this, but there is work going on right now to address individual artists. So it's... And I don't have that information
right.
yet, but we were assured by the Oregon Cultural Trust and Brian Rogers of the Oregon Arts Commission that
mm-hmm.
there is something coming down the pike for individual artists.
Well, this is very heartening, I must say, in many ways. First of all, hard, cold cash, period. That's good. And second of all, to feel that the arts are being supported and that the legislature is paying attention, because we're often on the edge of our seats or the razor edge or whatever the metaphor can be, not knowing whether there's going to be any funds for the arts, even the radio station, of course. But so it's exciting to feel that there is money that's going to be used. So was it the Federal Government CARES Act? Was that specifically for cultural support, or was it the Oregon legislature?
The CARES Act, the money, you know, came to the state of Oregon, and the Oregon legislature and the emergency board decided that this portion of that CARES Act money would be spent this way, and that the Oregon Cultural Trust would be responsible for it, and that each county and tribal cultural coalition would be involved in the distribution.
Fantastic. So one of the beauties of Oregon is, compared to, for example, Washington, is that we have arts councils and cultural coalitions throughout the state that have been operating, some more successfully than others, whereas in some states, the arts council is centralized. And that means, you know, sometimes you have to start pedaling fast. So I'm glad that our cultural coalition, Clatsop County Cultural Coalition, speaking with our co-chair, Charlene Larson, Janet Bowler is the other co-chair, and there are 13 other members in throughout the... Now, what's the way for people now? We have the OCT site. Go to culturaltrust.org for your application for this. How does someone get in touch with the Cultural Coalition if they want to, nothing to do with other stuff?
We have a Facebook page and also a website.
Okay.
Put in Clatsop County Cultural Coalition and
that will
find it.
Get
there's
you
info at Clatsop County Cultural Coalition.
Great. I want to mention I want to mention that the Astoria Arts and Movement Center, which is mostly closed, although they are having Zumba classes and hip hop classes, and I just want to recommend that everybody do a drive by or actually park and walk around and see what gorgeous is happening. 10th Street and Commercial. And between Commercial and Duane, and you can see the fabulous windows. And there is another grant that's, the deadline isn't until October 1st, so we'll get back on that one, but that's from the Oregon Arts Commission.org, Arts Build Communities. So it's wonderful. Thank you so much, Charlene, for doing what you do, which is a lot everywhere. Charlene also plays the bass, the stand-up bass, which is one of my favorite instruments, and is with the Partners for the Pack. And so we'll let you go because the show is about over. This is Arts Live and Local. Thank you so much for being here and for telling people how they can get money. What a great thing to be able to do.
Thank you, Carol.
Okay. Folks, thanks for listening. Stay tuned.